More than 2,500 acres on the Big Island are in papaya production. The majority is in the Kapoho area, which has now been overrun by lava from Kilauea volcano. We talked to Scott Enright, the director of the State Agriculture Department, about the potential losses of an industry that is tied to hundreds of jobs.
We're projecting it's going to be 50% of the industry that will be destroyed.
And we're talking short-term and long-term.
Right. You know, the ability for the farmers to rebound from that financial loss, we're not sure that we'll see them all go back into farming.
And my understanding is this triangle is some of the best land for farming papayas.
You know, potentially it's yes, on the Big Island and the way that we've been farming, you know, producing papaya with irrigation is really the best way to control your crop, and that's one thing they don't have there, but it's inexpensive land that has produced a good quality crop. So yes, it's some of the better land on the Big Island.
And most folks may not realize that that's where a lot of our papayas come from, is the Big Island. I mean, we have some on Oahu and I think Molokai.
The papaya industry was located on Oahu until the ring spot virus showed up. It moved to the Big Island where, you know, it's probably 90% of the production is currently.
And that also is tied to jobs.
It's tied to employment opportunities for a number of farmers and their families. Those are usually smaller farming operations, and then the produce of papaya get aggregated at several different aggregation centers where they're shipped abroad.
I understand that you were there recently just talking to some of the farmers that were affected just in general.
That's true. I was there last Wednesday to talk to the farmers and spent an evening with the farmers that were being impacted at that point. Offering them assistance in terms of our loan program so that they could replant, but also the governor's asked that we be responsive and see if we can assist on some relocation and helping them find land resources going forward.
We understand that that's happening on all levels, that some farmers are saying, yes, I've got some fallow land, you can move your cattle here or move your honeybees here. It's just, you know, helping out in this time of need.
It is, and you know, but it's going to be the ability of some of these smaller agriculturalists to rebound financially, being able to, you know, start up in a different location, sustaining the losses that they did.
Do you have a handle on who are going to be the hardest hit?
You know, as you can imagine, because it's all been related to how this current eruption cycle plays out with, you know, the volcanologists were never quite sure if it, you know, sputters out or whether it keeps going on for an extended period of time. It appears this cycle is going to have some longevity. And so with people that we weren't sure that would be impacted, say, earlier this week, we now have an expectation they're going to be impacted. So we're accumulating the data on the affected farmers, and it's dynamic, so we're trying to collect it as we go. To the extent that this eruption cycle continues along the way that it's been going, it's going to impact just about everything in its path and all of Kapoho. The magma varies in its mineral makeup, and you know we were very concerned, as is the university, with the fluoride levels that we've seen before from outbreaks, its toxicity. We're not seeing that just yet. We've been testing and haven't seen it, but it's still a concern. And yes, to the extent that some of the grazing lands closer to the volcanic activity itself, as opposed to, say, Kau, we expect there to be some impact.
Is there anything that you want to underscore for the farmers? You did meet with some of them last week, but these disaster loans are available. I know there's probably a lot of red tape that's involved with that.
Well, you know, we're, the governor's asked us to move forward quickly with disaster loans, which the Board of Agriculture approved last week, Tuesday. So with that, we're expediting the process, and we're also telling the farmers and the ranches that there won't be an expectation of repayment until they're fully operational again. So, you know, whereas it'll take a while to cycle in the crop and to start getting your revenue stream going, we wouldn't expect a payment until they were fully operational again. So that should be a real assistance to the agriculturalists that are affected by this eruption cycle.
Right, but the concern then, of course, is still the agriculture workers who will be without crops to harvest for a while.
That's correct. They need to, you know, stay operational and be able to afford the expenses of everyday living. Yeah, it makes it exceedingly difficult, which is why, when I mentioned earlier, there's an expectation of some fallout from the number of farmers that will be cropping papaya.
Anything else you can share with us? Just, you know, it's a very dynamic situation, but obviously we're trying to do what we can.
You know, all the different stakeholders, the University of Hawaii and the Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, and the Hawaii Department of Agriculture will work collectively to do all we can to assist farmers and ranchers that have been affected. So that will continue.
And that was Scott Enright, director of the State Department of Agriculture. He adds that Kauai's taro farmers have not been forgotten. The state has asked that its loan program be expanded by another $7 million to help offset the recent losses. And back on Hawaii Island, papayas are not the only agricultural product being affected. Beekeepers are among those who fled the Puna area during the first weeks of the lava flow. Hawaii Island is a major exporter of queen bees, and the honey and beeswax industry is estimated to be more than $10 million annually. We talked to University of Hawaii's bee expert, Christina Mogan, about the stressors that our bee industry is under.
The queen breeders, first of all, are mostly based on the Big Island in the state, and that is a very valuable industry. So they are providing queen bees back to the mainland United States, but also to Canada. And that's an industry that's worth over $10 million annually here in Hawaii. We know that we've got them, you know, a lot of them maintain their apiaries in the southern part of the Big Island, but then also on the east coast in the Puna area. And unfortunately, their apiaries have been affected. And so many of them have had to move their hives out of the immediate area. So it's not necessarily the effects of the immediate eruption, but also, you know, the fallout that's coming from the ash and also some of the gases as they blow around. So they're impacting the plants, as you've talked to others about. But, you know, unfortunately, the effects that that's having on the bees themselves, it's not something that's particularly well known.
Right. I mean, we don't have volcanoes going off all the time. So really, this is kind of new science, and we don't know how they're affected.
Right, very much so. And even worldwide, I mean, certainly we've got volcanic eruptions that occur, you know, annually, you know, all over the world. But with regards to being able to, you know, get into those areas and do research on honeybees specifically, the effects of these eruptions, we just don't have a whole lot of information available. What we do know, the research that has been done has mostly focused on the effects of ash specifically on honeybees. So we know that coming into contact with ash, so if it contacts their bodies, it can affect their exoskeleton. So insects have kind of this waxy layer that helps them to not get too dehydrated. And when the ash interacts with that, it can cause them to dehydrate. We know that that ash getting into, you know, kind of in between. So if you think about an exoskeleton on the outside, it's a bit like a plate of armor. And if you start getting grit in between your plates, they're not going to slide like they should be. And the same thing happens with the bees. So you're going to have pieces of ash getting into those like sliding plate areas. It's going to affect their external membranes and then can cause death and inability to fly, which would be the biggest impact to the foragers that need to be collecting pollen and honey as resources for the rest of the colony.
Well, since this eruption and the evacuations is still so new, I imagine then a number of these beekeepers, you know, have questions about, what should I do? What can I do to protect my hives?
Right. And I mean, the best information that we can give based on the research that has been conducted to date is to, well, first of all, move your hives, if at all possible, get them out of the immediate area before they get cut off or, you know, experience too many negative effects from the gases, especially, but move them to a safer area. It's best to restrict them foraging on the plants within the area as well. So put an excluder on the entrance to the colony and also provide them with supplemental food at this point in time. So sugar water and different types of supplements that can be purchased to keep the bees going, at least in the short term, until they can be moved to an area that's safer for them to forage.
Right, and they may have just relocated temporarily just to get out of danger. And then we'll probably have to look at what to do long term.
Unfortunately, that's true, because the area that's currently being impacted by the eruption is really important for honey production. It's a really great nectar flows in that area. So unfortunately, moving the hives out of there will have an impact for beekeepers who are using that area for honey production. So, I mean, that is going to be problematic in the short term, but hopefully, being able to locate to other parts of the island can hopefully at least resurrect what they're able to collect for this year anyway, for their own personal operations.
And then as far as the VOG elsewhere, because there are probably other beekeepers on other islands, I mean, should this whole supplemental, the nutrition, be something that they need to be looking out for?
No, I don't think so. It's just really only going to be pertinent to the beekeepers who have apiaries in the areas that are currently experiencing VOG conditions. If this is, other islands, it seems like the trade winds have mostly been keeping everything to the south of us, so no one else has really been impacted. The only other impact I've heard with regards to the eruption was actually the big earthquake that we had the other day. And there was a beekeeper on Maui who was out in his hives right when that earthquake hit, and he said it turned into a sting central for about 20 minutes afterwards. So they felt the earthquake, and that affected their behavior in the short term. But then about 20 minutes later, he said that they were able to calm down. So being wary that if we have earthquakes that are being felt off of the Big Island elsewhere, that there could be a temporary effect to the behavior of the bees that may not make it safe to work with them in that immediate point in time. But other than that, as far as supplying supplemental feed for them, that it should not be something that other beekeepers should worry about at this point in time.
What about when we have different temperature changes, where there's more rain or, maybe there's fewer flowers? I mean, what do you advise folks?
And that's hard because, the weather can be variable across the state and between years as well. We have had beekeepers here on Oahu have issues where the bees are effectively starving right now because we don't have a very good nectar flow just because there has been so much rain. So the weather can affect how the plants are able to produce resources that the bees collect. And in those situations, it's just it's important that the beekeepers monitor their colonies and see what's coming in. If they notice that they're not bringing in as much nectar as they should be, then providing them with supplemental feed is certainly important just to get them through the rough times until more forage is available, or if it's possible for them to move them to an area where there is better floral resources available. But when that's not always possible for everyone, and many people too are sideliner or hobbyist operations, for them it may be worthwhile to just supplement for a short period of time to get the bees through. Getting access to actual flowers in the environment is going to be the most nutritious option for bees, but in the short term it is important. You got to be able to get them through, particularly in the times of year when that they're ramping up production. So the queens are laying a lot of eggs, they're producing a lot of workers, just start ramping up honey production, because that's just the time of year it is. And so it's important to make sure that they have some resource available during these kind of critical times of the year.
Right. So, but I'm sure like with all this action with the volcano, lots of potential research could be done because we really just don't know a lot about how bees are affected.
Right. I mean, there are very little has been published at all in any of the scientific literature for volcanism and honeybees specifically. So there is a lot of area of potential for research to be conducted, not necessarily on the impacts to honeybees themselves, but also on bee products. So it's not something we understand very well. So there is information to suggest that there could be contamination, at least of ash within the honey, possibly in the pollen, less so in the pollen, but it seems like bees may be more impacted by ash that they collect when they're collecting nectar in the field. But as far as the downstream effects that has on products like honey or wax or, you know, pollen that's being produced as a human nutritional supplement, we just don't understand that right now, unfortunately.
Okay. And then what about for folks who are just who have gardens and want to see more bees, you know, in their backyard?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that people can do. So, you know, in general, aside from the volcano right now, there are a number of issues that face bees that are contributing to declines. In Hawaii, our number one issue is the varroa mite, which was a mite that was introduced. It appeared in the islands around 2007, 2008. It's currently only present on Oahu and on the Big Island. It's not something that we have on any of the other neighboring islands, but it transmits a number of diseases. And so for beekeepers, one thing that they can do is help keep these mites within their own colonies, keep the mite populations under control. But certainly there's issues with pesticide exposure. That can be pesticides they're encountering within agricultural areas, but also in home gardens. That's something I think a lot of people often overlook, is that chemical use in home gardens does have a significant impact on honeybees, particularly those foraging in our home gardens. So using good pest management strategies and monitoring to make sure, first of all, you even have pests in your garden before spraying. You know, even if you have some pests, if your plants still look healthy, that's okay. You don't necessarily need to treat them.
And backyard gardeners and hobbyists can find out more about pollinators at an event this weekend. Christina Morgan and other experts will be on hand at the Urban Garden in Pearl City Saturday morning to talk about how to help our honeybees and other native species. It's part of a pollinators event put on by Master Gardeners and the University of Hawaii. To find out more, visit the conversation page.